and welcome to the second season of Seniors in the Building. We are four friends exploring aspects of aging together. Our conversations run the gamut from humorous to serious to maybe outrageous. We hope to hear from new voices this year as we invite guests into our conversations. Thanks for being with us. Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Hello, everyone. Today we're going to go back to a conversation that we had before about retirement, if we're going to call it that, or third age learning, or whatever words we use to describe sort of this phase of life. We want to explore a little bit more about how we are actually experiencing this time and what are some of the things that we encounter as we move through it. Jack and I have been retired a little longer than Rick and Elaine. Not that that gives us anything, except that we've been kind of at it a little longer. So let's see what we come up with. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was saying earlier before we turned on the mics that it really is an awkward kind of space, for me anyway, because it's in between time, between being a wage earner and raising a family with those wages, supplemented and or maybe equal or even more money that you made, my wife. But anyway, so that's over now. Mm-hmm. And so we rely on our pensions, on government assistance, old age security, and so on. But that is not the full story of what retirement is. Retirement for me is trying to find meaning and purpose, reasons to get up in the morning, mm-hmm. Having reconstructing schedules so that I have something to look forward to. And that's not easy. It's like a total makeover of one's mm-hmm. life. I remember talking to faculty at a faculty meeting about my retirement, saying, well, I had a life before Augustana, mm-hmm. and I'll have a life after. But I never really realized how difficult that would be in terms of a complete makeover.
Yeah.
And then moving as well was especially difficult because that cohort of friends I had and colleagues was gone. Mm-hmm. And so who do I relate to yeah. on intellectual and personal matters?
Well, I wonder if part of what you're talking about is that for most of our lives, you know, our lives are structured, especially, you know, you start with, say, of course, you're an infant and a toddler, but then you start kindergarten and then there's education and then into the workforce. And then all of a sudden now things are not structured. You figure it out. And
yes.
sometimes it's like, well, I wasn't really prepared for this, or I thought I was. And we discover that we're not as prepared for this open-endedness.
Open-endedness. Yeah. That's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's very similar, though I don't remember well, building your life as an adolescent into adulthood.
Mm. Yeah.
And asking yourself, who am I now? Or who am I maybe to be yet? Mm-hmm. And that's a traumatic stage. Yeah. In here.
Well, it is, and it is.
Can be for
like
many.
For you, it was, I think, more tougher because you identified so much.
Do you mean adolescence or retirement?
Retirement. Oh. You identified so much with being.
Adolescence was tough,
I didn't
too.
Know you as an adolescent.
That's true.
Meet you until, well, I don't know, you were, what, 30?
Uh-huh.
29? Anyway, the identity of teaching, you really identified with.
Well,
that.
I enjoyed it, except for the marking.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was a different experience. I'm not sure I ever found my passion in work. I found work that I enjoyed and work that I could do a lot of different things. I think I enjoyed that. I think I enjoyed moving from one job to another. It was all within the same organization, but it was It was a lot of different things that I did. I always joke that I had the time that took you to do your PhD, I had, two children, mm-hmm. two different jobs, and done a master's degree.
Yeah, all right, good work, yeah.
So I like to move along. So when I retired, I think I had a different sense of myself as a person outside of working than you did.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Jack's analogy between being a teenager and being a retiree, and I can see some similarities, right? As a teenager, I was trying to figure out who I was and where I belonged and where I didn't want to belong. Actually, it was more on the negative side. What was I not going to be when I was going forward, right? And I thought the same thing would kind of happen with retirement too, right? That the things that I loved about my vocation, my occupation, whatever we want to name it here, I love the exploration and experimentation aspect of it, right? And I thought when I retired, I would have more moments of that, right? I thought that gardening would bring that to me. I thought, you know, going out and experiencing art in the world. I had this, you know, sort of imagination for how that was going to be reconstructed. And in some ways, that's not possible, or I haven't drawn the boundaries, I think. I would say that I'm retired from that particular job, but I'm still doing work in the church. And so I'm still part of the
workforce. Yes.
Still caught in that a little bit. So sometimes it doesn't actually feel like I'm retired. But sometimes against my own inner feelings, mm-hmm. My identity is still tied to that, right? I still go to places where people say, "Hi, Bishop Elaine," and I'm like, that's a job I left behind 7 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just, so I haven't quite figured out that, you know, I'm still lost in some of that piece, right?
I wonder if the other reconstruction of life, people who've gone through second careers, maybe if they have, mm-hmm. you know, left one track behind and say in their 40s, you know, either by choice or perhaps because of circumstances, had to reorient themselves to a different career path. I wonder if they perhaps maybe identify more with the idea that you have to reconstruct your attitudes, your life, your priorities. Actually, I wonder if those people have an easier time moving into retirement because they've done it more than once, like they've done in their teen years, they've done it again in their 40s. Yeah.
Well, I wonder too whether moving from wage earner to mm-hmm. retirement mm-hmm. is not in fact an entirely different kind of life stage that we've entered in, mm-hmm. sometimes without any continuity to the past. Mm-hmm. Though, like you were saying, Elaine, there's continuity to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But trying to compartmentalize that.
So for many, it could be a total life transition.
Yeah.
Total life transition.
I always said when I was working that I had two loves. One was textiles.
Yeah.
And the other was, you know, the work that I was doing in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And that when I retired, then I would be able to explore all of those textile things. And I have been. And I did. When we moved to Kitchener, I took several classes from an amazing studio in Toronto around block printing and fabric and, you know, doing a lot of different, and there was a woman called the Dress Detective where she was a costume historian or uh-huh. a dress historian, and she's done several books, and she did a course where we went through and analyzed different aspects of fabric and fiber in costumes. And it was fascinating, and I loved it, and I still love it, and I still find myself immersed in things like that that I've always loved and I've always wanted to explore more. So I've appreciated the opportunity to mm-hmm. to actually do that.
Right, yeah.
I think one of the things that I've appreciated about retirement is as Jack was saying a little bit earlier about, I'm getting out of that accumulation mode of life and I'm getting into the decluttering stage, you know, and I'm liking that, being able to let go of some aspects of, or things, material things that we've had in the past, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can mean making hard decisions, though, you know, because everything we have has meaning, or so we think.
Like every marathon shirt that you own.
they're still around.
They're still around. They're filling a couple of bins and a couple of
drawers. One bin. Oh, how did we get there?
So, I know. Letting go. It's an interesting, interesting process.
Yeah.
I was thinking just a minute back to what Signe said that, you know, because of the love of fabrics, you've carried it on. Maybe that's why they often tell people approaching retirement, get a hobby. You know, using the term, get an interest, get something that engages you that is not tied to your employment, to your work. And that's not easy for all of us, right? But maybe that was part of the trick, is then you can transition and you find something you engage in that's still enjoyable and meaningful, and you can do. I wonder if that's, you know, hobby often sounds trivial, but
it's not.
I know,
but but hobbies can be very intense and very fulfilling.
Yeah.
But I think we would go to all the retirement seminars and, you know, try to figure out what we wanted to do, and we would do all those card things where you show what your interests are and then you compare them to what your partner's putting up there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We did all that.
Good for you.
And it still
didn't help.
It didn't help.
Really.
Yeah.
In that transition, because it doesn't, I don't think, I think you can have an idea, but I don't think you can ever have a clear picture of what it's going to be like when you get there. Because when you have that time to think and process and just be with yourself that you haven't had before, other things emerge and other interests emerge, or other kinds of, I don't know, thoughts and feelings and
circumstances
too. Change. Uh-huh. I think it's really hard. You can have sort of a rudimentary plan, but
yeah,
I think it's very hard to just be employed one day and not the next, and have that all work without some struggle.
Yeah, recently a colleague of mine retired out further in the West Coast and sent a little text to me, said, "This is feeling really surreal." Like, in other words, and I know this person somewhat, they would have done a fair bit of meticulous planning because he's that kind of person. And yet now that the reality is hit, it still feels surreal. They still, I think, without asking them, they feel a bit at a loss, maybe, or maybe like, okay, now I'm here, now what?
Wanting to have conversations before your partner has had their third cup of coffee in the morning. There's a rude awakening in retirement, right?
There's that being with each other more.
Yeah, being with each other more.
If you retire with someone.
Yeah, if you do, you know.
I don't understand what you're saying. It's a lost concept.
But I also think that if you've lived a life of structure, that's the one thing that is, for me, has been so difficult. How can I build some structure and routine in, right? Because life just is messy, right? And it just keeps interrupting whatever structure I have, right? You know, and so so sometimes that can be a little bit overwhelming or discouraging to not have a plan that could actually be fulfilled or that could be completed in a week or whatever, you know. So it's
I'm wondering, this is kind of changing the subject, but when the two of you retired, you did not up stakes and move anywhere. You're still in the same place that you
were. Yeah.
You're still in the same community. And we've moved twice now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm wondering if there are if your experience is different than ours.
Well, you've moved, though, from Thunder Bay to here.
To Saskatoon and then to here.
And then to here.
Yeah. So we've done transitioning
done
over
moving.
The years.
Yeah. We've done transitions, but we haven't transitioned our life in Winnipeg to some other place, right? We've not been able to do that. And part of that, I I recognize is that we move so much in the first 25 years of our life together, right? Mm-hmm. And
interesting.
We lived away from family. They came in and out of our lives very loosely. And after conversations with our kids, we realized that they wanted to have the stability of being around family. So they needed us to be here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they wanted us to be here. I don't say that needing it as if that was only about their needs. They wanted us to be here because they...
And in their lives.
Yeah. In their lives, right? And so they didn't want us just flitting in and out as we'd done with the other side of the...
I think our experience points out both the positives and the negatives. The positives is, you know, staying, you know, not having to uproot and still having a circle of friends and also mm-hmm. family close. The downside is, and partly is the circumstances within the church, we're still kind of caught in that.
Yeah.
You know, because there's these mm-hmm. needs out there that we're asked to fulfill, and we can fulfill. We could say no, but we feel we can fulfill them. And I think that's a bit of the downside. So transition to what you might call full retirement maybe isn't totally there for us.
Yeah, and we kind of experimented with that last year when we went to Thunder Bay for 3 months. We thought, right. Well, let's see what detachment looks like. Let's figure out what's different about that, right? And I think because of the circumstances of the work that we were involved in, it didn't give us the opportunity to fully reflect on how positive that detachment could have been or how negative it was. Mm. Well, I realized the negativity, right? Yeah. We missed the kids. We missed the grandkids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We realized that. We deeply appreciated being with them and having family time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being included in their lives. So that was the positive about that. You know, we just haven't quite figured out.
Well, and maybe what that means is sometimes when you're in that reality, experiencing something, then you realize, okay, this isn't what I anticipated.
This isn't what I wanted.
Maybe I need to sort of be proactive or deliberate or intentional from here on forward and make sure that I don't get caught in that full time. But there's, you know, that we're still in control of our life and life choices. Not all of them, but we're still in control of a fair number of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Oh, dear. And that's kind of like you were saying, Jack, about you'd like to teach again.
Yeah.
But not have to do marking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know if teach, I'd like to share what I know, and what I miss is conversations with students.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. About their beliefs and how they're taking in what they're being taught about traditions that are quite different from theirs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I miss that, those probing conversations about especially Eastern religions, so-called Eastern religions like Hinduism and Buddhism, mm-hmm. different worldviews that millions and millions of our fellow human beings on this planet take for granted, just like we take for granted in the West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many things about the nature of the world.
And you would have been encountering students who probably that was so alien to them. So
absolutely, was, yeah.
So it would have been fascinating to teach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I guess maybe that possibility's still there, right? The passing on of the wisdom and the knowledge, so.
I was thinking you really do need some kind of institutional affiliation to do it.
Mm.
I mean, I could basically open up a course taught out of our house.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could.
Zoom. Yeah, but you could. You could do that on Zoom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just offer it up and see what happens, right? Or a dialogue, like here's a gathering space for people who want to talk about such and such or whatever. I think, again, we have many more options now to feed into our desires and our dreams for something else and something different in our retirement years, or whatever we were saying earlier, this third age or this third act or whatever.
And maybe that's part of the point, is we don't often realize that we have a lot of options there, which perhaps previous generations never did have, right?
Yeah.
And we need to explore that.
I remember talking with a colleague maybe about 10 years ago, and they said, have you seen the great courses online? I think it was great.
Oh, yeah.
Great something.
Out of Oxford, I think.
Yes, and how they spent their time when they had some free time, and they would sign up for a course and learn something new. And it was not just in the realm of their work sphere. It was just something odd, different, like, you know, mm-hmm. plants in Taiwan or whatever, you know. And I just thought it was really fascinating to listen to that person mm-hmm. speak about that, you know, to say, here are the possibilities, right? Mm-hmm. I can sit in my nice, comfortable recliner and do this, right? And I guess you can do the same thing in terms of gathering people together to have that conversation mm-hmm. and to do those things, right? You don't have to do the same old, same old.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, that there's a rare opportunity. I know before we started recording, Jack, you made the comment that it was indicated that retirement is a relatively recent historical phenomenon, that people would actually retire and not just die doing the work that they had done from birth or whatever. So I don't know if you want
or
to
some
comment
other,
more on that.
Yeah, or some other countries where they've developed the four-day work week, right? Mm-hmm. So that people can have a long weekend to provide balance in their life. You know, that's something too, right? That thinking about if that had been part of our life, we might have done some different things. We might not have had to retire so mm-hmm. so much sooner.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what you might have done differently had you had a different experience of work and a different opportunity mm-hmm. at work to
yeah
to,
different model
to have a little,
even
a different model of something.
Yeah, because I do know professors who still remain attached to their institutions and could teach an occasional summer session or
yeah, they
whatever.
They just come back as sessional.
They come back as
sessional.
You did that quite a bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
It was hell. Because I had to mark.
Yeah,
that's it.
Just teach courses for people who are auditing this.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
He retired 2 years before I did, so he did that while I was still working.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So retirement is an entirely new stage of life. I'm beginning to think of it as elderhood. Mm-hmm. We're now in the elderhood stage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? Personally, personally especially.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that we've come full circle in that conversation, Jack, because do you remember in the first few times that we were having conversations about this podcast, and I kept throwing out, well, we're elders, and you kept saying,
yes.
What is that? What is that? I don't
yes.
understand what that is. And now you've come to this point where you've come around to elderhood. Tell me about that.
Elderhood is not about productivity in the market economy.
Uh-huh.
But the psychological and spiritual impulse to nurture and support life beyond oneself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we're trying to do that in this podcast.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge transition, because so much of our whole society, and I think our upbringing, and again back to even childhood and school years, is all about productivity and being
yeah.
useful. And
salary equates with value.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And to see, you know, that's not always the case, and how do we adapt our minds and our lifestyles to that? It's not
yeah,
a,
and
not
a complicating factor is we keep on living.
Yeah, we're living.
Like, we get older and older. That is, demographically, we live longer than most people have ever lived in human history.
Yeah. So we're the problem, isn't it?
Well,
no.
But I also
healthcare is the problem. Keeping us alive.
I also think that there's a fine line between elderhood and being using the language that you've used and only wanting to talk about nostalgia, right?
I don't like nostalgia,
right? I like some things in the past. I like some music. I like some things that I learned, whatever. But I don't want to be going back to the good old days. And
yeah.
I say that
yeah.
around quotation marks,
yeah,
right?
I think we've talked about that and agreed on
yeah.
that in previous podcasts. So apologies to the people who do enjoy
love that.
Stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But I think elderhood provides opportunities, right? And
yeah.
I think we talked about some of these. It provides an opportunity to write memoirs, to have an oral history, to share with our families and whatever friends are interested. What are the reflections we have of the past, and how does that fit into our thinking today? And and how does it impact us today? And we've talked about some of that too. Yeah. We've talked about legacy again. Those are opportunities. But one of the other ones that I think we've had conversation about is spiritual elderhood, which is engaging in the practice of releasing and letting go.
Yes.
Mm. Right?
I mean, my attraction to Hinduism and Buddhism is that contemplative tradition. But it's also in the West, right? But it's interesting, I was thinking in the West, that is within Judaism, Christianity, and Islam in particular, that contemplative focus is often in a monastic strains, not for the general populace. But anyway, letting go of ego attachments.
What does that mean?
Which means things, letting go of things. Like, I was an avid collector, and I walk through the garage and I look at those boxes and boxes of what I would refer to as collectibles. I'm just going to take them all, because they've all been vetted with my kids. Nobody really wants them. Well, except some things now I've been asked to keep, so they stay on the shelf. But there's so much there that I thought I'd get into eBay and sell. And I enjoyed that for a year, and then it became just too running to the post office and then getting a complaint or something over a $10 item. Like, who needs that aggravation? I gave up that.
But then again, there's freedom, right? It became an aggravation, so you could
let it go.
You could let it go. So there's that freedom often again in elderhood retirement that we have.
But it's a freedom that can also become burdensome, having that freedom, because there's no limits, there's no constraints, there's no boundaries, there's no there's nothing imposed on you. You can freedom yourself all you want.
So then it comes back to what it is that you love and what it is that you value and what it is that you want to have there in your life and what you don't want there in your life. And then that becomes a discernment of...
Yeah, that's a letting go too, isn't it?
It is a letting go. I don't have to do that. That isn't what I want.
Yeah.
I'm cutting out the things that are pulling at you.
Right, and we can gerrymander our boundaries, can't we?
That's a good way to put it.
You know, I just thought about that in terms of...
That's a great way to say it.
Because we do. We're trying to fit what our life is, right? And so we set up our boundaries to fit that particular...
But the big limitation that comes back to me continuously, like a big lead hammer, is health.
Yeah.
My dad used to moan all the time. I remember him saying, if you have your health, you don't need anything else. And I used to think, what a bunch of bullshit. You know, come on, get over it. But now he was 100%. Like, my freedom I would like to use to travel. For the last 2 years, travel. In my mind, I'm in Thailand. Never been there. In my mind, I'm back to India. And then health issues hit. I'm not traveling anywhere.
That is a big
constraint. So that's a heavy, heavy weight and restriction on freedom. At least as a middle class white male see it. And I think we have to remember social context too. That we're talking about all these issues as white middle class people.
With retirement pensions and,
pensions and maybe some savings and
But I wonder that the health thing, I agree with you totally, that's probably the biggest constraint that we face. But I also wonder if that leads to some divestment. I still remember many years ago a retired elder woman talking about how as she got older she had more physical limitations to the point where she couldn't reach up to the top shelf of her cupboards in her kitchen anymore. And then it dawned on her, she said, if I recall it correctly, And then I just realized I really didn't need those top shelves in the kitchen. There's nothing up there. I could get by without them. You know, so sort of a mental divestment. Yes. You know, okay, it's fine. You know, I can't reach it, but that's okay. There's other opportunities and other ways to get around this.
I can go to Thailand online. Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, back to India online.
It is not the same, but it's still not the same. It's not beyond us, yeah.
But it might be able to feed something into that dream, right? It might be able to feed into it. And
But also, I mean, adapting the travel so that it is possible to go places is also an option. Mm-hmm. I remember a friend who went to Hawaii. He had ALS, and he was having trouble walking.
Yeah.
And his daughter was in Hawaii, and they went, and he spent his time in the airport in a wheelchair, and they made all the accommodations. Yes. So I think there are ways to manage travel so that you know, if you're feeling like it's impossible.
And if you're emotionally and physically up to it, because it takes immense effort.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like just walking now takes immense effort for me at Signe's pace, especially.
Well, just to give you an example of how much energy it takes, when we go on a trip this summer, I have found online every emergency department on our route that it was within 50 miles of us, right? Because I'm figuring, who knows what could happen to 2 70-year-olds on the loose, right? I mean, the last time we went on a bike trip in 2018, and you know, and I had an accident on the first day of the bike tour part, you know?
And we found how wonderful their healthcare system was, because it worked very well.
It worked very well, and the people on the bus who helped me get on the bus and get off the bus when I was going to meet Rick on another spot of the bike tour, I mean, they were fabulous people, the people at the hotel. So I'm making different plans for how to go. It used to be I'd really fill up my itinerary and be ready to go with where we're going to stop, what we're going to see, where we're going to stay, what's the mode of transportation. And this time I'm like, where are the hospitals?
Yeah, well, and isn't that
when are we resting?
Yeah. And when are we resting?
A form of risk management, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, and so maybe for us as seniors, this is, you know, traveling with our potential health issues is called risk taking. You know, maybe 20 years ago it was zip lining or parachuting, but now it's
good point.
It's risk taking, you know, knowing that perhaps this can happen, but we're going to go ahead
and take
anyways.
A deep breath and away you go.
And away you go.
Yeah.
So then you release yourself to be able to do the things that you would like to do, right? In some ways here.
So I'm going back to India.
Okay.
All right, yes.
See, so there you go.
Let us know how it turns out.
Yeah, let us know how it turns out.
I may never come back.
Well, again, that's a possibility too, right? Rick doesn't even know this, but I've also checked into what would it cost to do a cremation in the UK?
Okay, that's called extreme risk management.
Actually, that's a good point. In India, with the cremations, open cremation places, right?
Yes.
Okay.
No problem.
No problem, madam. But you know, that's on my list.
You need to burn your husband right here.
What will be our plans if one of us dies overseas, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm over the top over this stuff, I'm sure.
Well, some of that's risk management. And some of that is changing in attitudes. I think years ago when we traveled.
Yeah.
When we traveled, we would be more open-ended. We wouldn't structure everything so tightly. Now, this time when we're traveling, it's like, okay, we want to make sure, you know, we've got a place to stay in advance and so on. So anyways, there's part of that.
Yeah. Not driving until you feel you need to stop and then looking for a place. Having that destination and stopping well within the time in the day when you need to stop and rest.
I think
those are all strategies that are very... very useful to employ when you're traveling when we are all traveling as 70 plus
just like we taught our kids. Eat before you're hungry, pee before you have to. What's the other one?
Stop before you're tired.
Stop before you're tired.
Oh my gosh.
So we just have to apply it to our lives.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. We're second childhood here.
That's right. I think the other thing that we're experiencing in this so-called stage three is preparing for stage four, right? We thinking about it. We might not have had all of our funeral plans in place, but I think we're thinking about it more than we would have thought about it in our 40s, right? That I can't imagine, I might be wrong, but I don't think any of our children have their funeral planned, right? But I think in my mind, I'm coming closer and closer to that, so I want to be ready. Like, I want to be able to say to my kids, here's what I've planned, so you can just go in and you can do the grieving without a lot of the excess work.
And maybe that's just risk management, or maybe that's more reorienting our mindsets and adapting to who we are now.
Yeah, reconstructing our life and our identity, right? Yeah. I liked that at the beginning when we were having that conversation. I think the other thing that we talk about more is finances as we get older, right? Because as you said earlier, I think, Jack, we're not putting into a plan, but we're taking out of a plan, right? And so how do we manage? Because we don't know when we'll die. So how do we have enough money to go forward? Do we have enough money to do the things we want to do? You know, those kinds of things are foremost.
And how much does that restrict us too? Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of thinking.
I agree. The whole finances thing is a constant conversation, and doing as you're doing, you know, supplementing it when you when you can and want to, so that it's not as much of a worry or a stress. Mm-hmm. We have thought about doing things like that, but haven't really branched out to do anything more except selling some of your stuff.
Yeah, but those are conversations I think that are important to have.
For sure. What do we want to do with our money? What are your values? What are your goals? What are your interests? And that becomes sort of the place that you put your money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put your priorities. Yeah.
Put your priorities exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we're probably at the end of this conversation. Mm-hmm. At least
we're worn out.
People are tired of listening, maybe, or got some thought or have some thoughts of their own. So thanks for listening, and until next time.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RRS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design. As well, thanks to Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input, and we appreciate the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral four, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.